You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. It's not too hard to get sympathy for the awful killing of iconic animals in the wild. Everybody loves the elephants, lions, and tigers. It's a lot harder to get anyone to listen to the awful truth about our treatment of the animals, those animals who tolerate humans the most, the gentle cows, intelligent pigs, and docile chickens. In the United States alone, 75 million animals are killed every day for the meat diet that is scientifically documented to make people sick and fat. 2 out of every 3 Americans are overweight or obese. It's an epidemic that is spreading throughout the world. Many of our listeners know climate change is real and not a good thing, yet we try not to know that at least half of all greenhouse gas emissions come not from cars or factories, but from the far-flung empire of animal agriculture. If you don't believe it, get ready for the man who blows up the lies behind what we eat.
Radio EcoShock.
What is at the root of our violence towards nature, our indifference to changing the climate, and our murderous relationship with all the other species? Will Tuttle says he knows. Actually, that's Dr. Will Tuttle. His PhD comes from the University of California in Berkeley. Tuttle is a blazing speaker at conferences organized by vegetarians, animal rights activists, and progressive spiritualists. He also helped organize events like the online Vegan Palooza in 2012. A listener suggested Will Tuttle for Radio EcoShock, and I admit I had my doubts. Until I listened to a couple of his YouTube presentations, he is on to something big that you should hear. Will Tuttle, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex, so much for having me, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Well, I've been working on animal rights off and on this program, although it's not our major feature. Mostly we talk about climate change, and I'm always looking for the big picture, though, people that can clarify the right direction for action. And I know you've got that, but let's build up to it a bit. Let's start with, what set a younger Will Tuttle on your path of compassion for the animals?
Well, briefly, you know, I was raised in a typical family here in the States back in the 1950s in Concord, Massachusetts, eating the usual meals, lots of meat, dairy products, and eggs, and never questioning it. When I was maybe 7 years old, I said to my mother, so the food we're eating, is this what everybody eats? And my mother said, yep, this is what everybody eats. And then she came back a few minutes later, and she said, well, actually, there are vegetarians, and I had never heard that word in my life, but she said, don't worry, you'll never meet one. And she said, I've never met one, and I don't know where they get their protein. So I basically learned at that point that vegetarians are hypothetical people. And my mother was totally right. I went through life. I used to go away in the summers up to Vermont, to the summer camp where it was affiliated with a small organic dairy, and we would slaughter our own chickens and slaughter the cows ourselves. And so I participated in all of that, and I think I did it, of course, because I was a product of my community and my family and my society, and I knew that this is what you were supposed to do. But to make a long story short, after college, in my early 20s, I ended up going on a kind of like a spiritual pilgrimage. I just didn't want to go right into working, and so I wandered a little bit around the United States. This was in the mid-1970s, and I ended up at the time the largest hippie commune in the world. Actually, it was called The Farm. It was about 900 people living there in Tennessee. Most of them were from California, actually, and they were all vegetarians. And actually, I think today we would probably call them vegans because they didn't eat dairy products or eggs either. And they were not dying of a protein deficiency. They probably had about 200 kids that were thriving, and they were all vegan from birth, basically. So I realized that it's not necessary to eat animal foods because of this living example that I was living there with these people. And when I asked them why, and they told me that basically because we feed most of the grain and food that we're growing, we feed the animals and eat their flesh and secretions while people are starving. And when I learned that, and also they talked a little bit about the abuse of the animals that they endure by the millions every day. And so I think at the same time, you know, being able to eat meals with them, that was it. I never have eaten meat again in my life since that day back in 1975, 40 years ago. And then about 5 years later, I learned about the cruelty to cows and hens. And so I became a vegan in 1980. And a few years later, I was able to go to a Zen monastery in Korea. I lived as a Zen monk, actually, in Korea, and did a lot of meditation back in the 80s, and found myself, actually, for the second time in my life, in a community that was vegan, but they didn't call it vegan either, but there was no meat or dairy or eggs or wool or silk or leather or anything, and it was essentially a practice they'd been engaging in for probably 700 or 800 years. Primarily for, I would say, spiritual and ethical reasons, not to cause suffering to others. So that was it for me. I think really the main reason I was eating meat was because of the communities I was raised in, and the main way I was able to get out of it, actually, was these communities, these two communities that I experienced living in. And since then, I've discovered that eating animal foods is devastating to our environment, as well as to our society, and I would say also to our health and our and the inner landscape of our consciousness.
Well, now, Will, we've just talked with the famous biologist Dr. Paul Ehrlich. He and his wife Anne have a new book saying we are annihilating wild mammals and birds. Is that along with your thinking?
No question about it. It's we're in the middle of the largest mass extinction of other species in 65 million years. Driven essentially by one thing, people taking out their wallets and paying for meat, dairy products, and eggs. That's the driving force, because what's driving the force of the mass extinction of species is loss of habitat, destruction of habitat, destruction of rainforest, destruction of oceans. And what's driving that, we're cutting down about an acre per second right now of rainforest, and that's not there's one reason for it. We're growing soy, basically growing soy to feed the factory farm pigs and cows and chickens, and also, people don't realize it, but factory farm fish eat huge amounts of soy too, which are, the fish are then usually fed to other fish or fed to cows and pigs and chickens. But anyway, we're cutting down rainforests, we're overfishing the oceans. I just read the other day we've lost over half of the animals in the oceans in the last 50 years are gone. So that's all from meat and dairy and fish eating. That's it. That's the driving force.
Well, I suppose we're ready for the heavier stuff, except most of us are never really ready to talk or even to hear about our treatment of agricultural animals. How does that taboo reach even into people who otherwise consider themselves progressive and caring humans?
Well, I think, you know, Alex, the thing is very similar probably to living in, say, South Carolina back in the 1820s, you know, where you'd go to church every Sunday and the minister would preach in glowing terms about what a wonderful world we live in, where everything is in order and the white people are superior and black people are inferior and they're here to serve us and to be our slaves, and this is the way it is. You know, this is the wonderful world we live in. And we may be progressive, you know, in a certain way, but we are all essentially injected with a narrative from the time we're little kids. And the most powerful way we're injected with the official stories of our society are through the mealtime rituals. We sit down for breakfast, lunch, and dinner from the time of little infants, and we eat the flesh and secretions of horribly abused and tortured animals. We don't just watch the adults eating it. You know, we have to eat it ourselves, too. We're forced into it. And so that basically shuts down, I think, in many ways, our critical ability in this situation. We're just not able to look at it, and we have these overtones of feelings of security and respect for our parents and all these things. So it just causes a lot of cognitive dissonance and affective dissonance. We just get very uncomfortable thinking about the horrible abuse that we're causing when we take out our wallets and pay for meat, dairy products, and eggs to people who are starving, to the animals who are suffering so terribly, to wildlife, which is being completely destroyed by ranching and animal agriculture, to slaughterhouse workers that have to stab animals every day and who do work that brings out the worst in them, who have the highest rates of worker-related injuries, as well as drug addiction, alcohol abuse, spousal abuse, and so forth. And so the violence in animal agriculture is far greater than anything else we're doing. But we're genteel people, we're progressive people. It's very easy for us to just cover it over and not talk about it, because that's what 97% of the people are doing, basically. So it's time, I think, just to, you know, understand that and realize that if we want to have an earth that we're going to leave to our children, then we have to begin to become more conscious and mindful of the consequences of our actions.
You know, Will, when I was 13, I found a book on my granddaddy's shelf, and it was a horrifying collection of photos from the Holocaust, and nobody told me that there was industrialized murder of humans. And hearing you talk about what happens on big business farms, as they call them, especially the concentrated food lot operations, it reminds me of the Holocaust. Is there a comparison there to be made?
Yeah, I think, it's very clear. I mean, the original word itself, Holocaust, literally means whole burning. And it was the whole burning of animals for food and the killing and stabbing of animals. That's what the Holocaust literally is. I mean, that's what it actually is. And then the ways that were developed to dismember animals in an assembly line or disassembly line is probably a better word for it. Fashion was actually the foundation of Henry Ford and his assembly lines and all that, but also really the foundational paradigm that was followed by the Nazis in Germany too, using the same cattle cars to ship the people in and using similar types of mass killing that had been practiced on animals already. So, you know, psychologists understand very well. I mean, they understand very well that anyone who is a mass murderer of people always practices on animals first. That anyone, that if a child grows up and abuses animals and is allowed to do that, very often they will grow up to do the same thing to other people. And we have a society where we're basically, just in the United States alone, for example, we're killing 75 million animals every single day. Now, this is a huge killing machine that just numbs us. And so how can we expect, if we're willing and able to, each one of us, contribute to this, to killing so many animals, that we would not, that we would fail to stop the killing machine of other human beings, that we have nuclear weapons, that we can kill each other many times over, we have wars continuing, prisons. The whole violent system essentially is founded upon the daily killing and abuse of animals for food.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Dr. Will Tuttle, the author of The World Peace Diet, and we'll be talking about that shortly. What about the animal agriculture and climate change? Are there solid links there?
Yeah, that's another thing that I think is all too often glossed over. There's a new movie called Cowspiracy, which I think really helps to show a little bit of how this works. But basically, you know, animal agriculture uses enormous amounts of petroleum. People don't realize that. Also, enormous amounts of water. We're talking about 1,000 gallons of water to make 1 gallon of milk, for example. And the cows that are used in all animals, actually, pigs and chickens as well, they emit enormous quantities of methane as well as nitrous oxide. Methane is about 70 times more powerful as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, and nitrous oxide is about 300 times more powerful. And as well as the fact that we're cutting down the rainforests, which are the lungs of the earth, and also the oceans are being destroyed by the runoff and also the acidification caused by animal agriculture, the nutrient-rich runoff from fertilizer. So altogether, this is driving global climate change more than any other activity. The World Bank, I think as people know, Anhang and Goodland did in their research, found that animal agriculture is a full 51% of all human activity. I mean, you know, animal agriculture is the leading cause of climate destabilization. And right here where I'm standing right now in Northern California, just, you know, a week ago, there were fires raging all around me. Right here, I saw my own neighbors' houses burning in flames. We lost 1,500 homes right here. And the scientists at UC Berkeley just recently said that it has never been this dry and hot in California in over 500 years. This is unprecedented. And so the actual destruction of, we've had 150,000 acres of forest has burned here just in the last 2 months and killing people and destroying homes. I mean, global climate destabilization by animal agriculture, if we don't wake up to what we're doing, we're not going to have a world for our children, even probably for ourselves.
Wow. So tell us about the World Peace Diet. Is it a printed book? Is it an audio book or what?
Yeah, the World Peace Diet actually came out exactly 10 years ago. This is the 10th year anniversary, and it was a number one Amazon bestseller in 2010. And it's available as an audiobook, as an ebook. It's also been translated now into, I think it's, we're up to about 18 languages worldwide. So we just got back actually from doing some lectures in Austria, Germany, Italy, Switzerland, and so forth. And it's just wonderful to see, I think, that there is an awakening to the underlying message, which is that our mistreatment of animals for food is actually a mistreatment of the earth as well as ourselves, and that we can, each one of us can make a positive change. So the book is available. It's out there in many languages, and I go into these ideas much more, I think, much more in depth and probably a lot more, a lot better said too than I speaking.
Well, you're doing pretty great, I think. Is it natural for cows to eat meat or fish? And what happens when they do?
Yeah, that's another thing that people don't realize. You know, fortunately, people are starting to talk about it, but cows actually are eating more fish than human beings in the United States, because scientists discovered actually decades ago that it's profitable to enrich the feed of cows with fish meal, along with other things. Roadkill and a whole lot of other stuff is all ground up at the renderers. So this pushes the cows unnaturally, not only to fatten up for beef, but also to give more milk than they normally would. And it's not natural for them. It causes all kinds of problems. It's the driving force really behind E. coli, which is, you know, also causing a lot of trouble for human beings because there's feces that's embedded in the flesh of meat. That's pretty well known. So it's very important, I think, to realize that the way that we're raising these animals, feeding them and breeding them and so forth, is not only unnatural, it's profoundly abusive, that they suffer from the time they're born till the time they die. And if they're killed at very young ages, so it's really a slaughter of infants. And the only ones that live a little bit longer are the dairy cows. They live maybe 4 years, 4 years of misery, and are repeatedly impregnated against their will and have their babies stolen, and their babies are killed. Three out of the four will be killed. Only one will be allowed to be a slave like her mother on the dairy. So on any dairy, organic or not, it's essentially a rape and kill operation, giving us foods that we are not designed. We don't have renin like little calves have, which is the basic enzyme that we would need to break down casein, which is the main protein in milk. So the whole driving force behind autoimmune diseases, most of the childhood problems like runny noses and earaches and sore throats and tonsillitis and appendicitis and all these things are directly linked to dairy. So it's a great boon to the pharmaceutical medical industry to have this thing going, but it's just so much suffering to the female animals and to their babies.
Now, as a vegan, you say it's not natural for humans to eat meat either. I know many listeners will be doubtful about that. Have there been scientific studies that found early humans, say before the agricultural revolution, did not eat meat? I mean, didn't cavemen eat meat and hunt the woolly mammoths into extinction?
Yeah, that's a really good question, too. You know, it's very interesting. Just lately, as people, you know, do more and more research, the story's always changing. And I think it's important to always remember that our understanding of history, even what happened on 9/11, you know, we don't really know. We have official stories. And the same thing is true, I think, when we go back to prehistory, we have official stories. Those have been changing a lot in the last few years as we have realized, actually, a few important things. One is that the early humans going back 400,000 years ago, going way back, have amylase, which is essentially the enzyme that is only does one thing in our saliva, and that is break down complex carbohydrates that are found in starches. So now the whole official story of anthropologists is undergoing a radical change, that human beings did not eat much meat. They ate very, very little meat. Maybe 4% of their diet was meat. 96% of their diet was fruits and starches, starchy tubers, and things that they could gather. And this was reliable food, and we can tell that from the DNA, from the saliva, amylase, DNA, genetic composition. So the whole idea that we are naturally supposed to be eating meat, you can tell from our physiology. I mean, we have a physiology that's not designed for meat. I mean, I go into this in depth in the World Peace Diet, but essentially we can eat meat like cows. Cows can eat meat, you know, but it's not good for them, but they can fatten up and get sick, you know, eating meat, but you know, it's the same thing with us. We can do it, but our body would much rather have starch and vegetables and fruits and grains and nuts. These are the things we're designed to eat.
And what about the people who say they crave meat? I mean, people love the smell of bacon. You can have bacon peanut butter, probably bacon toothpaste for all I know. But doesn't that suggest that human meat eating is natural?
Well, you know, people crave a lot of things. I mean, if you had kids forced into smoking cigarettes from the time they were infants, they would probably crave smoking tobacco. They would say it smells so good. You know, they would just really want to do it. This doesn't mean it's natural. It doesn't mean it's healthy. If you just go to any grocery store and look at the baby food section, you will see these little jars of beef and turkey and chicken and veal and cheese. I mean, that's what we're given from the time we're little kids. That's why we like it. It's because we're forced into it. You know, for me, after 40 years, if I smell meat, it's disgusting. I mean, there's something hideous about it. You know, if you were to tell someone, well, could you give up eating bacon? They say, no, I could never give that up. It's so delicious. And then you say, well, could you give up eating dog? And they say, what are you talking about? That's disgusting. And yeah, I remember when I was a Zen monk in Korea, and I asked a guy if he could give up eating dog. He said, no way. I love dog. Could you give up eating beef? Oh, I would never eat that. That's disgusting. Now, it's just all culturally, it's just cultural programming, that's all.
So are there vegan cultures in the world, and are they healthy?
My feeling is that it has happened before. I talk about it in the World Peace Diet. There was a great revolution that happened on this planet, the herding revolution, when we started owning animals as property for food. And that culture brought in slavery, it brought in war, it brought in the domination of women and patriarchy, and it's based on dominating animals for food. And that is the culture we're born in, and that culture has taken over the whole planet for the last basically 10,000 years. So I think it's hard to see other cultures now, but I think it is possible, if we look back historically, to find remnants of sane, compassionate, and environmentally sustainable cultures. And I think the future for us as human beings is definitely to move in that direction.
So could we make this big change? I mean, what would the world look like with a vegan human population?
Oh, my gosh, that's an incredibly good question. I think it's just, you know, if you just want to have a beautiful moment, just sit back and imagine a vegan world. Because if imagining a vegan world is imagining a completely different society, utterly different. We can't even probably comprehend it. A world based on kindness and respect for creation, for the whole beautiful and abundant earth, for ecosystems, for animals, for each other, a world based on sustainability. We can feed everyone on this planet on a tiny fraction of the land. My wife Madeline and I lived for 17 years in an RV. We saw that most of the land has been enslaved to monocrop corn and soy to feed to these cows and pigs and chickens that are stuck away in these stinking sheds where they never see the light of day. So a vegan world would be none of that. The prisons would be free. The animal prisons would be free. The war would be destroyed. We'd be healthy and radiant. We could feed everyone on local agriculture. We could have local economies where we support each other. We could grow food that really heals us. You know, we have a garden. We have a food forest here now, and we've only been here a few years, but we've built a food forest. We saw people in Canada that were doing that. And when you just make a connection to the earth, you grow your own food, you're feeding life with life. The food will heal us and support us. We can feed everyone, as I say, on a fraction of the land. The streams could come back. The rivers could come back. The oceans could come back. Animals could come back. Instead of being a curse on this planet like we are now, we could find our place. We could live our purpose as blessing the world rather than destroying it.
How do we find like-minded people who can help us make the change away from killing animals for food?
I think the best way to find these like-minded people is to be one ourselves. You know, that's what I've discovered. When I make the change myself authentically, when I question the official stories and move to a plant-based diet for ethical reasons, then I create a field around me of freedom, of peace, of joy, of love, of caring, of kindness, compassion, empathy, sustainability, liberation. And I become a magnet for other people who have a similar interest. And I just start meeting them here and meeting them there. And pretty soon we can create meetups. We can create alternative communities. We create a movement. It's a grassroots movement that's invisible to the mass media pretty much. But it's definitely growing. I've been giving 150 events a year now for many years, all over the United States, North America, the world, actually now, Australia, New Zealand, China, everywhere, Europe. And basically, it's a massive movement that's growing, and it's the most important movement on this planet is the vegan movement, the movement for compassion and kindness and sustainability based not just on theorizing about it, but actually living it in the most crucial way, which is our daily meals. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where we're actually voting for what the kind of world we want to have, and if we're going to be heartless and murder and kill other living beings, or if we're going to be kind and compassionate and realize that we live in a world that's essentially, potentially benevolent, that we can live with kindness and love and caring on this planet. And then I think instead of being afraid of us, the animals would become our friends.
Listeners, do you want to free the animals and your own mind and conscience along with it? Try the work of Dr. Will Tuttle and the World Peace Diet. It's all at willtuttle.com. Will, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Oh, thank you so much, Alex.
In that interview, Will Tuttle quotes the figure of 51% of climate change emissions driven by animal agriculture. He cites a study by Robert Goodlin and Jeff Anhang. The title is Livestock and Climate Change. You can Google that, or you can find a link to that study in my show blog at ecoshock.info, which is published every Wednesday.